This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Grip Lock, Foundation Disc Golf's weekly podcast. I'm Hunter, joined as always by Trevor and Connor. The show today. We're going to do a little Patreon question of the week. UDisc put out their superlatives based on stats. So fun. Ooh. Little look back at 2023 stats. Simon Lazat is keeping things interesting this offseason.
Yeah.
With some bunch of different hot takes and then a summation of all the voting that happened, which that's fun. We'll have a little Trevor's trivia. And then Champions Cup has been rescheduled, but now it might get rescheduled again. We'll talk through that. And then finally, we'll wrap it up with a little in the bag.
What a show.
But first, quick word from our sponsors. Today's show is brought to you by Manscaped. Are you ready to spice up your Thanksgiving? As we dive headfirst into a mountain of mashed potatoes and cranberry sauce, let's talk about the unsung hero this holiday.
Okay.
The Manscaped Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. That's right. It's time to go cold turkey on your old razor and take your grooming to the next level with the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. You can visit manscaped.com and use code GRIPLOCKED, one word GRIPLOCKED, for 20% off and free shipping. And enjoy Thanksgiving in style. Don't let your poor grooming be the topic of the dinner conversation this year. With the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra, you'll be the talk of the table. It's waterproof, so you can groom wet or dry, and let's face it, we all want to look our best before carving that bird. Plus, the LED spotlight ensures you don't miss a spot, even in low-light situations. And speaking of carving, the dual skin-safe blade heads are your best teammates. The trimmer blade takes care of business, while the foil blade gives you an irresistibly sleek finish, like winning a touchdown at your Thanksgiving table. And for my men who go back for seconds, touchdown. Manscaped's Performance Package 5.0 Ultra is the ultimate bundle for the man who deserves it all. This bad boy is the whole plate and dessert. Included is the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra, the Weed Whacker 2.0 ear and nose hair trimmer, Manscaped's liquid formulation, and two free gifts, which are Manscaped's Boxer 2.0 premium underwear and the Shed 2.0 toiletry bag. So you can get 20% off and free shipping all of this with the code GRIPLOCKED over at manscaped.com. Again, that's 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com using code GRIPLOCKED. Be thankful this holiday season for the best gift of all from Manscaped.
I use our Manscaped code so frequently.
You're a frequent shopper.
I gotta rebuy my beard stuff.
It's like my new party trick to like be able to just... We've done more Manscaped reads than any other company easily. And so it's like a party trick for me to be able to just throw one out. Like I could give a Manscaped ad read at any given time. Like I know enough about the products.
Trick.
We all do. We know enough about those products that I could do them all.
My favorite thing is they keep when they send us like I now have two Lawnmower 5.0s.
Yeah.
So I recently used one. Incredible. Off the chest. I think I'm smoother than Luca right now. Secondly, that means the secondary one. Gonna be a gift this Christmas.
Oh,
I'm not gonna say
yeah.
for which brother-in-law, but one of you, you're getting it. Merry Christmas.
Stout.
He's not my brother-in-law, but he is in town. Let's hop into a Patreon question of the week. This comes from over at patreon.com/foundationdiscgolf. We've fully revamped our Patreon recently with giving Jason our customer service expertise. Customer service expert. The range of that thing, and he has ran with it. It is unbelievable.
Guys, he's so good at it.
It's awesome. So if you're interested in seeing a bunch of behind-the-scenes content, unboxings, our weekly Q&A podcast that I'm about to ask a question from, exclusive monthly videos, sometimes they do warehouse vlogs, all kinds of fun stuff, plus a monthly contest, discounts, access to the Heiser Club store, you can head over to patreon.com/foundationdiscgolf and join the Heiser Club today. But this question comes from Bry Guy. He said, if the DGPT season started today, which manufacturer's team has the most wins by the end of the season? It's an interesting question.
This very moment.
Yeah, so the signings,
forget
only
them.
The signings that have happened.
Forget about it.
So you have to keep Gannon at Prodigy. You have to keep
you
Eagle
gotta
at
pick, you gotta pick,
Discmania, Page
gotta,
at Discraft.
You got to pick either Disc. Well, yeah, if you go MPO,
I think MPO only.
If you go MPO only, there's only two people to even consider. And
it's
be
because if you include FPO, it's just unfair.
Well, no, you know what? Let's include FPO.
Okay.
It makes it interesting. Well, if you include.
Well, at least evens it up.
Well, because if you include FPO, that gives
true.
Like 6 to 8 to Latitude 64.
Yeah, but the problem is then you can't take Prodigy because they don't have.
I think I'm going Discraft.
Because then I take Discraft because you got Missy and Paige. We don't know
what
Holland.
Yeah, we don't know what
they're gonna make. They're gonna
format what. How much Paige Pierce will be back? We don't know next
year. Yeah, but they're just gonna get FPO.
I think even if you take FPO, even if you take FPO out of it, I still think Discraft.
Okay,
just because you
if you take him out of it, I think Prodigy's much closer because then you have Gannon, Isaac, Alden, Ezra.
Yeah, it's very interesting. True, it's close.
They got dogs because
like Hammonds could pick one up, AB could pick one up, Gossage could pick some up. Paul McBeth, we know he's gonna go back to Europe. There's a lot of wins we had over there. He could pick some up.
Because this year,
that doesn't even bring in Corey Ellis.
How many wins did Discraft have this year? Like 4 or 5, maybe.
Paul had
MPO.
Paul had one. Corey Ellis had one.
Hammonds
had one. I don't think AB didn't get one.
Dickerson didn't get one.
Nope, Dickerson didn't. I think they just had 3 this year.
Did they only get 3?
But I'm just saying the potential of wins.
Yeah, I mean,
there's so many guys that could
5, 6.
Yeah, no. I mean, Calvin Heimberg basically beat Discraft by himself this year.
That is true. No, Discraft is the best team.
I think Discraft's the best, the safest bet.
Probably.
They have a chance of not happening, but there's just so many guys that could win.
They would probably be the betting favorites.
Yeah, there's so many guys that could win.
They have their elite team is actually elite.
Yeah, I'd have to go with Discraft.
All right.
All around.
I like it.
He likes to craft.
Now,
so what? Mine?
You Disc released this Pro Disc Golf Stats MPO, who was the best in 2023. So this is just MPO.
Wow. Okay. You Disc.
And yeah, I was just gonna kind of go through some of these because I thought it was.
When are we
fun.
Getting that Ulti World Survey back?
We need the Ulti World Survey, and we need the Pro Tour End of Year Awards.
I know, and they're dragging their feet on that too. Like, what are you waiting for, guys? We forgot about what disc golf is by now.
Now there is a reason I wanted to bring this article up. I'm gonna just start reading these awards, like who was the best in what stats category, and hopefully it'll remind me what exactly I was trying to say. First off, best Circle One putters in disc golf, MPO 2023. Andrew Marweed was the best putter again.
Come on.
This list is kind of interesting.
It's really sad. I think I mentioned that last week, but like, how can you be the best putter in all of disc golf and like just didn't do anything?
93% C1X, 620 putts made, 666 putts attempted.
Whoa.
Yeah, bad number there.
Just throw one more.
Yeah. Come on. Didn't you throw one more putt, Marweed? Then Proctor came in second. Chandler Fry came in third. Chandler Fry is another similar to Andrew Marweed situation.
Surprised they're not even a little higher than that.
I never think of Chandler Fry as like a dirty putter.
Oh, this is an interesting one
Chandler?
Here.
Turns out Chandler's dirty.
Oh, Chandler dog?
You flip this guy over, Gannon Burr, circled over. 2 putting percentage on the year, 40%.
That's insane.
Wow.
On the year, 167 circle 2 putts made out of 413 attempted.
That's insane.
Now, Matty O was in second at 37.1%, and then Nate Metzler was in third at 37%. Ricky, a little bit of a shorter, because Nate Metzler only 54 putts attempted.
That doesn't count.
So you take him out, then Ricky Wysocki's third with 36.8% with 120 made and 326.
When everybody else on the stat sheet has like almost 300,
hundreds and hundreds, yeah.
Like you probably shouldn't let the guy with 54 putts count on the sheet. Come on, guys.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Come on.
Oh, here we go. This is why I wanted to bring it up. I thought this was a very fascinating stat. Longest streaks with no missed circle one putts. In pro disc golf.
That's
cool. Why don't we just guess who's number one? None of these streaks that are in the top five are active. Okay, but just who's number one?
This is by
no misses in C1.
What do they count it by? Tournament, round, hole?
This goes for all of these. I'll just give you a hint. Go for multiple tournaments.
Right, but what is? What am I guessing in? What?
No, just who comes first.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you don't need to guess how many. Just who's first on this list.
Okay. Well, I mean...
Oh, and you said they're not active as in they've missed since...
Yeah. So okay. None of these are like still active. Okay.
I think
ongoing
you can only really guess, like I'll guess Andrew Marweed.
Marweed?
Because like he's the best putter, so...
Yeah, that's what would make sense
to
me.
You have to guess one of the best putters.
That's the only thing that makes sense statistically.
There's not really a different way to think about it other than who's just the best at making putts. They would be most likely to have the longest streak.
But I bet, is it someone like from back in the day or something?
Yeah,
this is this year.
This is this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, then I don't.
Unless like,
I don't
understand
why.
Try and think about it as like, is there somebody that got hot in a certain tournament? Like, okay, I'll say Isaac Robinson because he gets hot sometimes. I'll say Isaac Robinson.
Okay,
actually,
I'll just stick to Marweed because that's what the math tells me.
It's Paul Ulibarri.
You dog.
148 putts in a row without missing from Preserve to European Open round 3 hole 2.
So dadgum.
Preserve round 3 hole 17 to European Open, he made 148 straight C1 putts. Second on this list.
That's crazy.
Ezra Aderholt.
What?
138 straight putts.
Brody's from, boys are good at putting.
From D-Glow round one to, well, not all
Brody's
of them.
Not on that list.
From D-Glow round one, hole one, to World round four, hole 12.
That's kind of surprising. What do you think your longest one is, like 12?
Yeah, maybe 13. James Proctor, like, he lines up on this list with 116. And then Matt Bell makes sense, 113.
I'm just thinking, if
that's
I,
so many putts.
If I'm in a round, like in a round of disc golf.
Does that include tap-ins?
This,
it just says circle one putt, so okay. I don't know. I don't know if it includes, yeah, but know. Even if it includes
no,
tap-ins,
circle one putts don't count
that's 100,
right?
But it doesn't say circle one X.
Oh.
It just says circle one. Mm. But even 148 straight.
It's still a very impressive stat, but yeah, you definitely could have half of them be from 10 to 5 to 10 feet.
Yeah.
But it's straight putts. That means that half the holes you're like 5 feet in.
It's also true. It means you're just playing well.
Or bad. Or
you
really
have to
bad.
Be playing well or putting well. Definitely a combination of both. I would say, like, if I'm in a round and I make like 6 or 7 C1 putts in a row, I'm like, oh, the putt's cooking today.
Oh, if I make three. If I make my first
48. Like,
if I get out there and make a 30 footer on hole one, I'm like, oh, putt's on fire today.
Yeah.
I'm not missing today.
Like, you got, like, I wonder if they realized that was happening. Like, I wonder if, like, they
probably
got
not. I could see, like, during a tournament.
Yeah, just being
but
like,
not from one tournament to another.
Well, I guess you'd have to realize it because you would be looking, like, I'm sure guys notice when they go 100% C1. Like, guys look at their stats after their tournaments to, like, see how where they were lacking. And I'm sure they just, oh, 100% C1X. Oh, 100% C1X. Like, they had to, their stats for C1 putting was 100% for multiple.
I want that stat, but of all time. Like, who has the longest all time?
You're telling me there were multiple tournaments where the rounds were Ezra Aderholt, 100% C1.
That's crazy.
Like, because it started D-Glow.
I feel like I would have caught on to that.
But again,
but it wasn't. It might not have been. Cause it had to be.
It had to be multiple rounds.
D-Glow round one, hole one. So D-Glow entire tournament.
So you're telling me you go round one through four and his circle one putting is 100%.
I'll look at it.
But the thing
one.
Is,
Ezra Aderholt 100% C1X.
Him and Alden.
Alden Harris was.
Oh,
also.
That one says C1X.
Well, yeah.
Well,
but
it
what,
has to
if
be
if you're 100% C1.
Yeah.
And then
anything inside of C1.
Worlds. So I don't know how many tournaments are in between there and Worlds, but Worlds he didn't miss one till round four, hole 12.
Because like the thing is that it's
crazy,
that's. Impressive, yes, but also it could mean you had a lot of short shots that left you with 80-foot up shots
but over,
that gave you a 15-footer.
Over that many
know?
Rounds, though, like, I would agree. If you do it, if you did it for one round, maybe two rounds. Where
yeah,
it's
but that's
like,
what I'm saying.
It's like, okay,
tournaments.
3/4 of your putts were from 10 feet and in. Yeah. You're just throwing well. But if you do it for multiple tournaments, you just made
that's what's
a ton
what's
of
crazy
putts.
Is Ezra Aderholt putted 86% on the season. And yet... 138 putts were made in a row.
That is crazy.
There's some ups and downs.
He was the 35th best putter on tour.
Which actually is pretty
year.
Good for him. I'm honestly proud of Ezra for that.
I'm proud of him.
35th best putter?
138 of those were made in a row. But that just kind of skews the stat. Because he has had this one streak where he couldn't miss.
I mean, disc golf is it's a game of runs, just like basketball.
Yep, same sport. That's why Andrew Marweed's so good. Best throwers / throw-ins. That's not that interesting. The PPI, I feel like we never hear about anymore, but remember that was like the precise power index. They released it back like last year.
I don't think
which
I understand
is, like,
what that means.
It's basically the more accurate they are with how far they throw.
Okay.
The power index.
I get that.
Yeah, so like how far they can throw while still hitting the fairway.
Okay.
Calvin Heimberg led that stat.
Shocker.
Not really
that.
A shock there. Simon Lazat came in second. The only other thing I really want, because like then you have like fairway hit rates, but the only thing I wanted to bring up that I thought was interesting to, not really interesting when you look at the season, but interesting as a just a fan of disc golf for years, when you look at like all of these are like the top 10 players that were in this stat category, right? Like best circle one putters, best circle two putters, throw-ins, precise power index, like all these different stats. Paul McBeth only shows up once on any of these lists.
Wow.
Which is the birdie or better percentage. Highest birdie rates in pro disc golf. Paul was fifth.
Is Brody on that list?
Brody's not on any list.
Okay. I know he led. I know he was like top five in total birdies at one point during the season. Like,
wow.
That was like he was always really high on the birdie list, but then obviously he was like very high on the bogey list as well.
Yeah. Well, because like Calvin is 51% birdie or better. Eagle was 48%, Ricky was 48%, Gannon was 47%, and Paul was 46.8% birdie or better. Now, Paul played 500 less holes than Calvin, which is something to factor in.
Fraud?
Well, no, I'm just saying like that some of it, some of the stats, like it does benefit you to play more holes. Birdie streak doesn't, but I don't know. I just thought that was the other thing that was interesting. Lowest bogey rate also Paul shows up, which is like the flip end of highest birdie with only 8% bogeys.
That's interesting. You'd think with those two statistics.
And the best scramble rate, he was 61%. Scramble rate, 61%. But like all the top ones of like the putting, fairway hit, power index, like stuff that I would have assumed, like back in the day, Paul would have been like top five, all of them.
Mm-hmm.
He was missing. And it was like the first time I scrolled, and I like got through several of them, I was like, I haven't seen Paul anywhere. And then I got down there, I was like, oh, here he is. Which the scramble rate, Paul's always been incredible at scrambling, so no surprise he's third there. And the lowest bogey, highest birdie, those are kind of like go hand in hand. No surprise there, but I don't know. I just thought that was interesting. But this whole list is very interesting. Best bounce back rate. You can just look through a bunch of stuff.
Oh my gosh. Who was it this that is another hated one. The bounce back stat? Well, didn't Brody hate the bounce back stat?
Sounds like something he would hate.
And like him and Dustin were jawing at each other.
I don't know.
Well, you might not have been on that episode of the big night. It got very heated.
Ricky Wysocki was the best bounce back rate with 55%.
I forget why he didn't like the bounce back stat. There was a reason that Brody was like so... And it made sense a little bit. It made like a little bit of sense where it was something about, you know, anytime you talk about anything related to momentum and Brody, he does not like it. So that's
how
what it was.
That's how you know that Ricky's real. Because he bounced back.
Oh, yep. That's something. Most active pro disc golfers, MPO 2023, Isaac Robinson. Now, I don't know what the stat fact is there, like how much that factors in, but he completed 1,662 holes, which was 92 rounds. Other people on this list is Jakub Semerad, Robert Burridge, Connor O'Reilly, and Gannon Burr. But in 2023, Isaac Robinson won a world championship and became the only person not named McBeth or Wysocki to win two majors in a single season in over a decade and played more holes at the world's top disc golf events than anyone else by far. So I don't know what they mean by world's top disc golf event. So I don't know what the category is there, because I know like back in the day, you would have like Emerson Keith one season played, what was it, like 74 events? Wasn't something crazy?
They're probably just
grouping. But he was playing like flex starts.
They're probably just grouping A tier and above all into one category.
Yeah, I don't know if it's like silver event, pro tour, something major, like or if that. It's like A tier, silver, pro tour, major. I don't know what they're doing. But the other thing that was very interesting over this last week was Simon Lizotte took to Instagram to put out some interesting takes here.
Very interesting takes.
And get people's opinions. So I'm not going to read all of the takes, because some of the takes he like summarized what people's opinions were on them, and then other ones he put up more polls. So first thing he put out was disc golf should embrace being quote unquote easier than golf. This debate has been going on for ages. The scoring is too easy. It makes our sport look bad if players shoot double digits under par. People won't take us seriously with scores so low. I disagree. Low scores are not what is holding us back. We're trying to make our scoring tougher by adding OB, making crazy greens, and often players get punished really hard for small mistakes. Gimmicky greens and gimmicky fairways lead to too much randomness in our game. That's what makes us look bad. And all for the sake of trying to get us to score closer to golf scores. How about we just accept that disc golf is quote unquote easier? We start designing challenging and fair courses, and players will shoot 10 to 16 under par. As long as putting is as easy as it is, these scores should be the norm, in my opinion. Is bowling going to change their game because the pros get a strike almost every time? No. Is darts going to make the field smaller because the pros almost never miss? No. Give us a smaller and better target to aim or aim for, or let's embrace the fact that disc golf is not like golf.
I found the statement really interesting, because he basically just said, let's not make the game harder, but then gave a way to make the game harder by making the disc golf target smaller.
Well,
so I thought that was really interesting to do that whole thing and be like, why would we make it harder? But here's how we should make it harder. So I don't.
What I took from this take is I think that he worded, from what he's saying, I think he worded it wrong. That I don't necessarily think he's like what he said is disc golf should embrace being easier than golf, but the reason he thinks that is because of the way stuff's trying to become harder, which is like the way that they do OB and stuff like that, and the way they're pushing pros. Whereas I think if disc golf were to become harder with like better course design, and what I mean by better is more so like if we had control over the properties to the point that like OB wasn't just ropes thrown out in a field, because like that's what kind of is he saying like gimmicky and looks, or if we're using golf greens as OB, like that's the stuff that like makes the sport look worse, which it seems what he's coming at it from is like the optics of that.
Yeah.
Because in my opinion, obviously I'm on side, disc golf should be harder because we'll get into
like
what other people...
I don't anybody shoot 16 under. It bores me.
Well, the problem, in my opinion...
I don't want to say anybody. I don't want to watch like the field expected to shoot
that's
that.
What the problem, in my opinion, is if disc golf embraces being easier, then we can all experience this. If you go and play... If you're a MA1 or higher player and you go to a weekly at your local pitch and putt course...
Yeah.
Or you go to a weekly at the toughest course in your area. The toughest course in your area, you're going to be in the top percentage because you're the top percentage of better players, being an MA1 or better. If you go to the local weekly at your pitch and putt course, you're not, because now the ground's even because they've made the course, the game, too easy to where an MA3 player throwing thumbers can still get up and down from 120 feet every time. Now, that's on a very extreme scale, but if you blow that up and you keep disc golf easy, we're like... Falling Creek is a semi-difficult course to your average player here. If the pros showed up, they would destroy it, similar to Fountain Hills in Arizona. So if you took the pro tour to Fountain Hills in Arizona, right? Yeah, to your average player, that's a somewhat difficult course. That's not to the pros. It's just a hyzer fest. So what that does is it makes it where the skill gap disappears because every pro on tour can throw 400 feet. Every pro on tour is a competent putter. So that means every pro on tour can score really well out there. So now there's no advantage of being better at disc golf than others. Whereas if you go to a place that actually makes disc golf harder in a fair way, not a gimmicky way, but a fair way, such as a New London or I think Northwoods Black at times, like courses MVP, Maple Hill, where they're very challenging, but they're fair, then you get that separation where the cream of the best players are still going to rise to the top. 16 unders can still happen. Like when Paul shot 16 under at WR Jackson, that is just an insane round. It's still out there. It's still possible, but it's not the norm. The problem is if disc golf has 15 under as the norm, then there's nowhere to go. So what you're going to do is these 30 people are going to be at 12 to 16 under, and then that's every round, and you're not going to benefit the player who has actually put in the work to be the best. That's why I think disc golf should be harder.
I think he makes a really interesting argument and a kind of a clever one using the darts and bowling example, but here's what I have to say about darts and bowling. There is a reason that darts and bowling are only as big as they are because they are very simple sports. They are played in the same conditions with the same board, same lane, same pin. Okay, there might be different oil patterns on the lane, whatever. And therefore, they are pretty boring to watch. That's why only diehard fans of those sports watch them. You're not really going to tune into bowling.
There's no like casual bowling
and
watchers.
I would argue because they are so easy to the human eye, to the person who would just tune in and watch it, that is what makes them boring.
Yeah.
Golf is a game that is built out to be endlessly complicated. Okay. It's not throw the ball at pins or throw the dart at the target. It is navigate a course that can change every single time. Even if it's the same course, it can change because of the conditions and what choices players make. You can't compare two of the simplest games ever created, literally, to one of the most complex games, potentially, when done correctly, ever created. That is pretty silly to me. I know Simon likes darts, but like, come on. We just compared throwing needles at a board to golf. They're very different. So I think that's the thing is like those games I think have actually hit a ceiling because they're so one dimensional. There are exciting things that can happen in them. Sure, I know bowling, you know, picking up an awesome spare, like that's great. That's a great moment. But there's only so much you can do within those games. Golf has endless limitations, and trying to narrow it in so early in disc golf, especially, I think is foolish. I think that they should continue experimenting with all kinds of things. I also think that disc golfers are prone to just getting really upset at obstacles because they're not used to it. I still think that is a thing. I think they see OB that to a spectator is very exciting to navigate, and they all get super mad at it. And I think a lot of that does come from the fact that discs react really squirrely when it comes to... I think that's one of the issues of disc golf and out of bounds is that when a disc hits the ground, especially the grounds that we play on that are not perfectly manicured, that is something important to mention, they get weird reactions. I think if everybody was playing on... I think when they play a golf course, like if they play Wild Horse, those reactions that they get are a lot more predictable. like just when we played, when you're playing on a golf fairway, you pretty much know what's going to happen to the disc when it lands. If it's got hyzer, it's going to skip. It'll dig and cut roll. It's very predictable. I think because we play on unpredictable courses with terrain that isn't very predictable, that makes the OB feel super gimmicky. And that is a problem. I understand that. But I do think that players should be punished. It makes the game more exciting. I don't want it to be lucky or gimmicky either. Nobody, I don't think anybody wants that. There's obviously going to be somewhat element of luck within this sport. I mean, you look at golf, like you could land on a sprinkler head and your ball could jump somewhere. You could hit the flag stick and spin off the green. Like that's just part of sports. It happens. But yeah, I think that there are some good ideas in that take, but like I said, and you kind of erase the whole thing when you make that whole argument and then say, but here's how we should make the sport harder. And I agree, and I think we both agree, that the best thing that disc golf could do without touching anything else is make the basket smaller.
Yeah.
Like I've said that forever. Like you'd barely change the game at all from an optic standpoint. So many people talk about like, oh, well, then we wouldn't ever have aces. That would be way better for the sport if aces were more rare.
Yeah, well, it also, you would still have aces because like you can still throw in on a marksman basket, but it would be so much more rare that when one happens, it's way more exciting. Like right now, it's so weird to me. Like, I don't know. It's weird when a pro steps up and like an ace, like if they're going for an ace, that's a real, like it's almost a skill in disc golf. Yeah. Like they can, like it's not just I'm trying to get close. It's like, well, I'm going to just try to throw this in and then I'll make my 50-foot comebacker. Like that's a thought process a lot of pros have.
You need rare things in your sport that get people super exciting. And right now, disc golf, the rarest thing we have really like that happens like within reasonable chance is the ace, and it's just not that rare. And I think
well, you can tell it's not that rare because of how many Instagram accounts exist
that just ace.
Ace only.
And it's really? We're just going to push this narrative just look bad.
We were able to make videos that are called, like, we can't leave until we ace or something like that.
Yeah. Or we just had, like, three. At the end. Like, there's whole courses designed for the purpose of it, basically.
What I like about... Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, to your point, I think part of what disc golf's experiencing is the sport is in a big evolution phase where we're discovering what the next step of disc golf course design is. And what is happening right now is players are being forced and asked to throw shots and think through situations that they've never been asked to before.
Yeah.
And so I think we have players responding different ways because now they're being asked to play golf between the ears and not just throw frisbees.
Right.
Because to a certain extent...
Because it used to just be walk up, throw a hyzer. You were robots.
But to a certain extent, yes, we can't... Imperfect ground, there's going to be some rollaways and stuff like that. But some of that's magnified because players aren't thinking about angle control.
It's true.
To where it's like, oh, you have a green that's really slanted. You can't just throw a spike hyzer into the side of it and hope it sticks and then get mad when it rolls away. There's the next evolution of disc golf, in my opinion, is bringing touch back to the game and touch with distance shots where you have 450 feet into the green and you're having to think of how that disc is landing. Because in golf, that was the thing that like opened up a whole thing for me in golf was like, once I saw that players are controlling the spin from like 200 yards out or even farther, really though, like the 100 yards and in, they're having so much control over the spin that they're picking the spot on the green, the ball's hitting, and then it's spinning the way they want it to get to a preferred putt. And like in disc golf, we just don't think that way.
No, yeah, it's a total change of thinking. I mean, golf caddies will literally walk onto a green and start dropping golf balls and watching how they roll to see where they want to land their shots. Like, it's a different level of thinking preparation.
Like, why can't we think through disc golf that way?
We can. Disc golf has always been a who can throw the disc the best, just walk up, throw the stock shot, and like execute it. And I think it is evolving into more of what golf is meant to be. Maybe some people will hate that. And also, I do want to say, I never expect disc golf to get as difficult as golf.
No.
Because it can't. Because putting is much too easy.
You'll never make it that hard.
It's way easier to control a frisbee than it is a golf ball. The margin for error, like it's pretty rare for you to just completely shank one the way you can a golf ball and lose control of it.
Unless you're doing a practice swing.
Yeah, unless you're doing a practice swing. But I would just like them to be controlled. And what I don't mind an event where the hot round comes in at 13 under, but that same guy the next day on the same course could shoot 2 under. Like that's what I want. What I really want is the separation. And unfortunately, the best way to do that right now is for courses to throw an OB. I would like to see it happen on the putting green because that's typically where it's going to happen. The difference between a lot of golfers' rounds going well or not is what happens on the putting green. Whereas in disc golf, that's part of it. But, I mean, you mentioned Ezra Aderholt, 35th best putter, and he's putting 86% from, like, the you need to be making these putts zone. Like, that's really high percentage. So, yeah, I don't know. These are good points. It's just, like, the analogy of the darts to bowling thing really bothered me because it's like, if we are going to take a sport as complex as golf and dumb it down to bowling and darts, then we are failing because we are ruining a sport that is so much more complex than those
what two. I really like about what he said is the...
I think I probably offended a lot of bowling and darts fans, but come on, guys.
that I do think makes a lot of sense is I like that he's saying don't make it harder by making it more random.
That's totally fair.
That does make our sport look really dumb whenever it's so random. But I also, something that I haven't thought about before is what you guys are saying where, like, with golf, they go out and they have to, like, there's a study element of golf where you have to study
every,
the course.
Every sport has a study element, realistically, except for disc golf right now.
Yeah, because realistically, we shouldn't, this sport, like, on the professional level of this sport, there shouldn't be someone who can roll out of bed, i.e. their car, slam a Pedialyte and get in the mix. Like, that shouldn't be able to exist.
Disc golfers are not used to having
You should have to go out and study and be like, okay, I understand that with this green, it gets really tight here. With this side is really fast. And like, that should be part of it. And so maybe that seems, and I still think that there's a fine line between intentional and gimmicky. I do think that exists because some things are just like, yeah, that's way too random.
Yeah.
But like, there is like something to be thought of maybe things that I have thought is gimmicky. Maybe if you spend more time studying and paying attention to how it reacts on certain parts, it's not random. It's just,
I think some of what's considered gimmicky in disc golf is gimmicky just because the pros have told us it's gimmicky.
Right.
Whereas like something's not gimmicky. If I can step up to a hole and I have a quote unquote gimmicky green, but if I can throw a consistent shot and get a consistent result every time, that's not gimmicky.
Yeah.
So because I used to be in the camp, and I'm wrong, I used to be in the camp of nothing should be within 30 feet of the basket. I think there's a lot of disc golfers that are in that camp. It's like, well, I got to the green, I should be rewarded. No. I'm now fully understand, like, there could be stuff within 15 feet of the basket on the right that makes it where, if you go to the right, you're 20 feet from the basket, but you're screwed. Because
you
threw to the right.
Give you a hard spot to aim for.
Yeah, so now I've got to aim to the left side of the green. So when I'm scrambling, when I'm in the fairway, I have to plan out all of my shots to make sure I have the best shot into the green to give myself an open putt because I have to think through that. Whereas before, it's just get as close to that metal thing out in the distance, make a putt.
Well, the sport's just been created with a lot of expectations that players have. And it's just one of those things where I think it makes the sport infinitely... Because, like, yes, the players, it matters for the players. Like, they need to be somewhat enjoying what they're doing or else none of this works. But, like, at the end of the day, you got to have a product that people want to watch. And... yeah, like with the, back to the bowling and darts thing, like there's a reason that those sports have only made it so far, and they're old sports, really old sports. And guess what? So is golf, and golf has made it a lot further because it is a better sport.
When people pros shouldn't be frustrated by things being harder because if it's good harder, not random and, harder, then it's harder for everybody, which means that you still stay at the place you're at.
And the tough thing is, like, at USDGC is where this gets amplified the most, where we literally watch pros come in and we either overhear them or they'll talk to us, and it's just them talking about all of these bad breaks they got. And I think it's really interesting. Like, frisbees interact with the ground. They're not really meant to, right? Because they are a flat surface that lands on angles. It's not like a ball that rolls that's a little more predictable. It's like, okay, we just know that gravity and the slope is going to do what it does to a ball. Frisbees can do a lot of weird things. They're tough to control into the ground. And I think when you go and you play Winthrop Gold, there's OB everywhere. And guess what? The ground is not perfectly maintained. It is just kind of ground. And so you're going to get bad kicks. You're going to get rollaways that are weird. And yeah, that's frustrating. So I do think that is a tough thing for disc golf, where it's like, if you make the courses super difficult, but then you also have grounds that are unpredictable, that I think is what, like, that doubles up on the players, I think, and just makes them extra frustrated. So that's why I think it'd be just easier all around to just make the basket smaller. I'm on
I like the idea of making them shorter, not like overall shorter, but just the chain, like,
you could also go the Ken Climo route where he was talking, make the cages shorter again and take chains out of the basket.
Kenny was, people did not like that take.
I like it.
The problem with Ken Climo's take was what he was describing was basically like,
I think we just need a can jam barrel.
Yeah, what he was describing, like if you ever putted on really old baskets, like if we go to Peaks View, it's like, yes, you it does require touch, but there's it brings so much more luck back into the game.
Because, is it luck, like, though?
Yes. Like there's
We need to test it. I think we need to test because like I feel pretty confident that if I practice putted on like if Mach 3 or whatever's at Peak, Mach 2, whatever's at Peaks View,
I don't even think they make them anymore.
Was the standard. Right, and that is what I learned to putt on. I could get where I don't miss on that basket.
If you hit low enough on the pole.
Because I think the problem, well, no, but the problem is right now we take a basket that's designed for modern day disc catchers.
Yeah, right.
And we're jam it into the center and you expect it to catch.
Right.
And then we take that to a basket that's not designed to catch that way, and we jam it into the center. And when it bounces off, we call it randomness.
No, it is true. Yeah.
Whereas if you were you're designing your putt for that. I mean, of course the top guys in the world can get where they don't miss a putt. I've seen Paul hit putts with nothing but a pole, 50 in a row with just a pole.
Yeah,
that is true.
And he just painted the pole and he made it.
There is definitely two like eras of putting because like, yeah, back then everybody's putt, you didn't see guys throwing laser beams because they didn't go in. You saw guys putt with a lot more less finesse. Rotation. Like they kind of just dropped putts into the basket, and now you got guys like Gannon Burr who... Yeah. Are just ripping putts.
Yeah.
And yeah, because they catch. So like that is interesting. I thought it was it was very interesting because everybody in the comments was like, oh, so like you just want good putts to spit out is what you're saying.
But then
like,
it's not a good putt.
And it's a
95% of putts that spit out. 95% of putts that spit out are not good putts. I'll die on that hill.
People do get pretty worked up.
Because like here's the thing is we give pros too many outs. Too many excuses. They're professionals. This is their job.
Their job.
It is not too much to ask them to learn how to putt on the basket that's in front of them.
Yeah.
You can't take a basket that's designed for, or a putt that's designed for a Mach X and then take it to a veteran basket and then be mad that the veteran basket didn't catch.
Yeah.
You had all week to putt on the veteran.
Uh-huh.
You know when you throw a 70 mile an hour putt dead center that it's going to come back at you.
I think the bet that pros are taking without realizing they're taking it, or some of them probably have thought through it, is if I just keep my same putt, I have a better chance of making more putts than if I have to change it every week. But
sure, I'm just saying
they still get worked up about when it then spits out.
Yeah.
Right.
If your strategy is I'm throwing this putt as hard as I can dead center,
then you have to accept
then you can't
the
be upset
outcomes.
When it comes back at you because you threw it too hard for the basket.
Well, the other thing
you.
Is the funny thing is too, like the even easier step towards like a fairer and better game than even changing the baskets is just standardizing them on the tour.
Yeah.
Yes. Very true.
Well, that's
there's
a
like,
step one.
That will also make disc golf easier though.
Huh?
It'll make disc golf easier.
Well, that's why.
Maybe not for some players.
We gotta shrink the basket down.
I never thought about shrinking the basket. Just
I don't like
though.
Shrinking the height, but I like shrinking the distance between the cage and the band. Because I feel like it's weird if you're just always putting
down.
Yeah,
that's what I meant. Yeah.
Like, not the also total. Like raising the basket.
Raise the basket. But I also like that if you miss, you still go a decent distance. Because if you're just putting down,
that would be very interesting. Because then you still have the same width.
I like that.
It's just like you're slotting it in. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's still and with it shorter like that, I feel like it catches almost everything that goes in. But it's hard to go in.
Be interesting.
Because I don't. The marks.
I'm gonna experiment with that.
I think we
got to
shrink it both ways.
Up.
Okay.
Oh, you want even
let's make
smaller,
let's make a basket.
Well, basically, it's just be the hit circle.
Yeah.
Where right now you have the hit circle, but then you have like
you have to make
this
the
is
hit
definitely
circle
catching. Right now, it's like this is definitely catching.
Uh huh.
And then it's like this is probably catching.
Yeah.
Well, technically,
I want just definitely catching,
like
not catching.
The best spot of the hit a basket is technically just a little bit off to the right of the pole. Because if you're on the pole, if you're onto the pole, then you can sometimes get straight through to it and bounce out.
That's what I'm saying. It's like we should just have definitely catching. Probably not.
Here's a better solution.
Versus definitely catching, maybe catching, still could catch, probably not catching.
It's a beam of light, and it can detect when something breaks it, and then there you go.
Just tone pole.
That's it. It's basically that, but it's with technology.
Next, we saw at the
course we filmed out the other day. We saw really good, really cool innovation with baskets. Those baskets look crazy.
Yeah,
look just like trash.
Yeah.
This next one, Simon said last weekend at a course design conference, I heard this idea from Chuck Kennedy. Instead of making OB an instant stroke penalty, the player gets the option to rethrow without a penalty or play normal OB rules. So if your tee shot goes OB 60 feet from the basket, you can choose to re-tee throwing two or take it 60 feet from the basket throwing three. Is this a good idea?
I feel like OB rules are pretty fine.
Yeah, my answer was a bad idea.
Yeah.
What's the point of that idea?
Slow play down, I think.
Yeah, I'd say that would make play even slower. That's the problem.
Because, like, I guess it's so I threw OB, so I'd rather take my chance on this tee shot and try to get closer to have a putt to putt out for three versus a 60-footer. But 60% of Simon's audience thought it was a good idea.
I don't think it sounds easier.
I like Simon a lot, but he does have very differing opinions on, like, disc golf stuff like this than I do a lot of times, and also his audience agrees with him, obviously, a lot of times.
Well, it sounds like he didn't have an opinion on it, right? He was just asking.
No, he was just putting out there and, like,
He's good at having discussion. Like, he doesn't bear down on any opinions. He kind of just likes to throw stuff out there, but yeah.
Oh, this is
Simon Army's going to rip us all apart.
I'm about to go to what the results were after 12,000 votes. And I was voting on all of Simon's polls, and I was just, every time I'd vote, my jaw would just drop because I was like, how am I that far in the minority with a lot of stuff?
That's just been our whole podcast.
What I've learned after seeing the result over 12,000 votes, number one, score clusters are good. So the first thing, score clusters are good. I'm okay with that. But the way it was presented was basically like making scoring easier so that the scores get tighter. Separation's good. I don't like clusters in that respect. Because that's why I don't like, I'm fine with score clusters if it's like, okay, yeah, there's like five guys at 17 under through two rounds, right, or whatever. But those guys could all fall apart next round.
Yeah,
I'm okay with it being tight. I'm not okay with it being like 30 people are all in the mix right now because the course is so easy.
I think disc golf, like the scoring this year was pretty good to where like most of the time the best players were winning the tournaments, and like how often, like we never see blowouts.
Yeah.
That's the funny thing is, and well, most of this has to do with strength of field, but like in the birdie or die older disc golf, that's where we saw way more blowouts than we do now. Now what we have is more exciting disc golf and this like actual clusters of scoring.
Well, because there's so much pressure and there is like birdie or die. If you're hot, you're hot.
Yeah.
This momentum, as much as Brody hates it, momentum can stop on a dime when your shot goes OB and now you just took a six and your buddy, the guy who's chasing you, just took a two. Yeah. And it's like, there goes four strokes into my seven stroke lead.
From a spectator standpoint, though, like, yeah, the score cluster, like, yeah, we don't want to see bad players not get rewarded, but the obviously.
Score clusters are good as long as it's on a course that can provide separation. Because where score clusters suck is on a course where there's a guy has a four-stroke lead with three holes to play, and there's no chance he loses it.
Right.
That gets very boring very quick.
Also, I would argue, too, like if the scoring separation was so non-existent that you had too many players in the mix, that's actually bad for spectating because there's only enough cameras for two cards and maybe one other person. So if we had 15 players all within like three strokes of each other going in the last day, that actually, while that sounds exciting to look at on the leaderboard, following it would be a nightmare.
Yeah.
Like I love seeing it when there's like lead card and chase card are all still in the mix, or maybe six guys, like two of the guys from chase card are still in the mix. And then the four guy, that's great to me. But like anything more than that, it kind of just gets overwhelming from a spectator point where it's like, how am I going to keep track of this guy on fourth card that is still only two off the lead? That can be a little bit interesting.
Number two, throwing farther is and should be an advantage. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Absolutely.
Putting is not too easy. I wonder if the Pro Tour should have different targets than your average course. Then you had another poll where should the Pro Tour have different targets than your average course, which was split 50-50, yes and no.
I think they should.
I definitely think they should. But people were saying putting is not too easy. So people were saying putting's plenty hard enough, not too easy. I think it's
most
tough
of your putts, most of your putts that matter happen inside of C1, and the guy who's leading almost never misses. He's 93% from there.
Well, yeah, the problem is when you ask, is putting too easy? To me, of course not, because I suck at putting.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But to the sport, yeah, it's way too easy.
Yeah, I think it is.
Like, you got to separate that. Because
it's a
tough
one. It is a tough one.
Here's how you know putting's too easy. If I went out for 4 days in a row, and I putted 150 times a day in my backyard, I will be a drastically different putter the next time I go to the course than right now. I can get good so fast at putting.
I think
that's that shouldn't be true at something where like we're trying to create a future-proof sport.
People get the wrong idea too, where I'm not talking about making the basket small so that people are missing 15 footers. That would look stupid for the sport. Yeah. I'm talking
pros
about
aren't going to miss
because they
footers.
Won't. Yeah. I'm talking about making baskets small so that they're missing more 25 to 55 foot putts. That range where right now they're just jamming everything, but it would still make sense to watch a guy miss that putt and it wouldn't look stupid.
Well, I also think it should be smaller to where putts that are bad putts aren't caught.
Right.
Right now, a pro can miss his aiming point by 2 feet and it can be caught and still go in. You threw a bad putt. It shouldn't go in. That's why I think the basket should be smaller, because like good putts, the hit point on a marksman basket and the hit point of like I'm making this putt every time on a real basket are the same.
Yeah.
So that doesn't change. Mm-hmm. Like Ricky Wysocki, when he's drilling them from 60 feet, he's hitting the, he'd be drilling them on a marksman basket. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. When a guy's on, a guy's on. But what it takes away is if I'm from 60 feet and I miss 7 inches to the left, I missed that putt. But right now, there's a chance it still catches. That's what I want to take away, because that's the randomness of I messed up, it still went in. Mm-hmm. That shouldn't happen. Mm. If you want to see one of the worst thrown putts of all time that went in, head over to my Instagram. I posted it like 2 weeks ago. I didn't even hit chains, but the basket's so big that it just like caught the edge and flopped in somehow. And it was like the putt was, it was one of the worst thrown putts of all time. Has to be. And it went in.
Very exciting to watch though. Loved it.
Next says we should work on eliminating OB and making a better OB rule. So basically the audience voted that OB just should disappear. Work on eliminating OB.
Eliminate OB and make a better OB rule.
Or no, make a better rule.
You know
what? We should eliminate OB and make a better rule.
You know what I liked that Brody proposed? I liked the idea on a lot of courses this would work, particularly wooded ones, where there's two cuts and the first line is just hazard. So you just play from there with a stroke. It acts like rough. And then the second line, like way, if you throw a really bad shot, then you're OB.
I definitely think it should be a lot more hazard in distance.
Because imagine at New London, if it played like that, obviously they have to make it OB. It's a conservation area.
But there's rumor that holes, like the first three holes, the right side OB might disappear.
That would kind of hurt the course, I think, a little bit.
Mm-hmm. It would help my score.
Make it a lot easier, though. In any case, I think that would be a fun way to go about it. Like, you gotta have out of bounds.
Yeah.
What are we talking about?
I like
about?
OB.
Yeah, it makes, to be honest, when I go to a course and yeah, okay, I don't play a lot
OB
of competitive
OB might be the most
golf.
Predictable part of our game. It's always OB.
Yeah, that is the thing. Like,
just
yeah,
don't throw there.
Tree kicks are the random thing. Like, whether you throw a, like, sometimes it's like a bad shot can end up in a better place than an almost good shot because of where mm-hmm. you hit a tree. But like OB, it's just there.
Yeah.
Like you just throw towards it. Like I think OB makes this sport more fun.
Yeah, I agree.
Because it's like it's an obstacle. It's cool. Like when I step up to an island green, even if it's just flagged, that is more fun to me. I'm like, yeah. Oh, cool. We have like a target more than just throw it towards the basket. There's like something to aim at. Some people just don't. I just think I don't understand. I think people want to play disc golf and just be robots and be like, there's basket, throw to basket. Instead of like having to think about how they're playing it and being like, okay, maybe, like, why don't you want to be more analytical? It makes our sport endlessly more.
Well, you do have to think. Like, if I'm just the, because I think there's two different sides of a sport, right? And what golf has done is it's evolved over time and everything's evolved together. So it just is understood if I go out to a golf course and I break 100, I played a pretty decent good golf round, better mm-hmm. than average golf round, right? Mm-hmm. Even though I shot 20 over par, 25 over par. Whereas like disc golf, like there's two different sports going on within one. Because like if I'm a weekender, right? If I play casual disc golf as much as I do, which is like maybe once a month, twice a month, casual disc golf. Mm-hmm. I play a lot for videos, but once or twice a month I get out to play a casual round. It is more fun if I get to go out and just birdie everything.
Yeah.
That is objective. Like, that is more fun.
I don't know. That's sure. not, that wasn't, that, whenever like, I was like, the very first couple years playing, I really wanted to play the hardest layout at every course. I wanted to be punished by the course. That was
yeah,
what
yeah.
was
but I'm saying, like, it, right now I see pros shooting 16 under. I want to go shoot 16 under.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
It's all about what the press
I don't
the sport
like OB.
Set.
Like, I love OB, but I'm saying I could see where a weekender would be like, there's plenty of guys that go and play their local course and don't play the OB room. There.
Yeah.
Don't play the Mandos.
I'm going to say, there's just a lot of disc golfers who don't like negative feedback.
There's two, there can be two different rules, right? Because if you go to a PGA Tour event, what they've done is they've made it where golf scores the same for pros and for AMs. But how they do it is the tee locations, the fairway cut, the rough, how fast the green is, all of that changes when the PGA Tour comes to town, right? True. To where when they play that course, even if you're a guy who plays that course every week, when the PGA Tour rolls to town, your scoring would get drastically worse if you showed up to play that course again mm-hmm. because the course would play completely different. Disc golf, we can't really do that, but we still need to treat the tour differently. So like OB, smaller basket, stuff like that needs to happen on tour, right? And then the scoring will still look the same to us because, like, Timbrook Park down the road isn't going to put in marksman baskets tomorrow, yeah. right? They're still going to have the same baskets. Just because the tour went to marksman basket doesn't mean you have to go to marksman baskets. So, because if not, disc golf's going to keep evolving. Players are, I mean, we just got to the era where players are making millions of dollars and they don't have to worry about what they do on the course. Some of those players, sure, are going to put it in park and they're just going to stay where they are. But what that's going to do is other players who are making $250,000 and they know they could make $1 million a year, they're about to get so freaking good at disc golf because now they can hire personal trainers. Mm-hmm. Now they can go get stretched out every other week. Now they can pick and choose what tournaments they go to. We're entering an era of disc golf where players are about to get so freakishly good at this sport that the modern day quote unquote tough courses are going to get, I mean, eaten up. Like, W.R. Jackson used to be a tough course. Players used to go there, and it was hard to get to double digits.
Mm-hmm.
Guys go out there, and it looks like a laughingstock when they shred it because guys are getting so good at this sport. We have to future-proof it. If we keep making it easier now, then 18-under is just going to be a normal round at the course for guys, which is ridiculous.
That's what it's like with the whole putting thing. I don't think people realize that if you super glued a penny to the wall, how many pros would be able to hit the penny over and over and over again? Like, so like pros making the baskets harder really is just,
I think that right now it's best we're young enough and the sport hasn't gotten to like some chokehold where the players are out there not scoring and having fun. That just isn't happening. Like, players are still shredding courses. I think we just need to let it go for right now. There can absolutely be a breaking point. I'm not going to deny that. Like, even golf, there was a lot of lashback when I believe the USGA was talking about restricting golf balls that can be used because golf technology has evolved a ton. Courses have had to try and keep up with guys hitting the ball further, spinning it more, doing this and that. And, you know, they started talking about making it more difficult once again, and this time restricting the equipment. And I think Justin Thomas was the one that was like, said it was ridiculous. He was like, I don't know about you guys, but when I go out and make a bunch of birdies, I'm having it like, I've never once gone out there, made a bunch of birdies and said that wasn't very fun. And, you know, it's a different point because golf is way harder. But I think there can be a point where, like, yeah, if we got to the point where we were just taking all the life out of disc golf to try and force some score, then yeah, I agree. But I just don't think we're there.
We're not there yet. No.
I don't think we're close.
They're trying to get guys to shoot just like 12 under instead of 16 or 17 under. Yeah. Golf's trying to get guys to shoot 1 or 2 under instead of 7 or 8 under.
Or like over par.
Yeah, or over par. That's completely
different. Golf can be a bunch of weirdos sometimes with how it's mostly the USGA because they have the US Open and they like to make those guys try and shoot like, they try to make them miserable, basically. That's not the goal here. The goal is just to create...
The goal is to make courses where the best players can rise to the top.
Right, courses where there's separation, and if you got guys that are all shooting like 16 under, then that's just not...
Yeah.
That's just not really separation.
The next point I think everyone will agree with, disc golf rounds should be shorter.
Yes.
I think that makes sense.
Good one.
and then putting for eagle is okay, because he's basically saying, should eagle be something where you only have, like, only throw-ins can happen? No. I think a drivable par 4... Well, the risk reward is good.
It is, yeah, I say it's my favorite. I think that in disc golf, the eagle scenarios need to come with a risk reward. I think when it's just purely, you throw far enough to get there, then it's maybe a little too easy just because, once again, how easy putting can be. It's not like you're earning yourself a 2-putt like you would in golf. You could be getting really easy putts for eagle. I do like it. Like, my favorite eagle scenarios are like par 4 where you can try and clear something or lay up and take the easier bird, like at USDGC hole 10.
Yeah.
10's like,
gotten a bit too easy, but yes.
But holes like that, or a par 5 where it's that same scenario but on the second shot, I like that the most. But yeah, it's totally fine. It's just a score.
Then he went back to putting up more polls after this. Should the Disc Golf Pro Tour care more about playing the best courses or playing in the best locations? 85% said the course is more important. 15% said the location is more
85%
important.
85% do not care about the well-being of the Pro Tour, I guess.
Yeah. I voted location's more important.
It has to be the location.
The course is more important if you're a player, sure, but for the sustainability of the tour, it's all about location.
Yeah, so I disagree because they need the tour to make money.
Like, if you're going out there and all you care about is like what's in front of you, then yeah, you want to play the best courses every time. Yeah. But if the best course is in Timbuktu and there's only one hotel nearby and the population of that town's 50 people,
and I say that not being ignorant, I've been to like a lot of different places in this country, and I know that there are I think that they can have both. I think they can have good courses in good locations or near good locations with accommodations. I don't think that it's like a one or the other thing, and that's why I say this so strongly. I'm not just like, yeah, I don't care if you're playing in some random park as long as it's near Charlotte. No, like there are good courses in Charlotte. Mm-hmm. Just like there are good courses near city centers in Texas and wherever they might go. I think that they make sacrifices to honor tradition and disc golf communities. But it's like, well, you got like listen to what lacrosse had to do to get their sport off the ground. Lacrosse for years was trying to operate like any other sport where, you know, teams had cities, that's where they played. Well, when the PLL came along, they reinvented the sport by doing a touring model, and their whole focus behind that touring model was, we are just going to go where the most lacrosse fans are across the country, and that's where we're going to play our games. We don't, like, that's all that matters. Obviously, they don't have to use courses, they just need facilities. And now they've gotten to a point where they've grown enough to where now they're just introducing cities to their teams. Like, that helped them grow. So I think disc golf, there are enough places. And I think I don't think they're completely ignoring this point. I think that the ones that they're holding on to, such as the Emporias of the world, are because of nostalgia and tradition and connections and relationships. I think if it's up to the Pro Tour to choose a new location, they're going to choose it based on where the people are.
Yeah.
I don't think.
Well, the only thing they're running into right now is like they put three tournaments in Texas, right? Back to back. Two of them, Waco and Austin, are an hour and a half from each other and they're back to back weekends.
Yeah.
You're pulling from the same audience twice. You're close to Austin and then Waco's close to Dallas. Great. But if I'm in Dallas and a Pro Tour's in Austin, I can make the 3-hour drive, or if I'm in Austin and Pro Tour's in Waco, I can make the hour and a half drive. So like the tournament in Waco is close enough that you can draw people, right? But now you're drawing the same audience twice, which means neither event's going to be well attended.
That is a tough problem to solve. It's like you do want separation in the event so that,
like, it happened with Charlotte when you have USDGC and then you have Tour Championship next week.
You want to only draw from a location like once every so often, or once even on the whole tour, to make sure you get that population center the most you can, and then you don't have to like split them.
Yeah.
But then also you don't want the tour to be them to have to drive like hundreds and hundreds of miles every single stop. Like there's a balance there, but yeah, you're right. Like having that many in Texas is going to be weird. That whole swing of the tour. There's a reason that it always feels like the tour picks up momentum a lot of times when it does get, you know, kind of start coming back this way, because I feel like they hit really good spots and they hit them like nice distances apart. But there's just some outliers of like, I mean, you see some ghost towns out there on tour, and that just shouldn't happen. There's not enough like events for it to be that watered down, I feel like.
No. Well, I think there's just some communities that would show up with a ton of pros, with a ton of fans. They're just underserved because of lack of course. Yeah. Like I understand we played Vista and we played Fountain Hills. Neither of those courses in their current format can be on the Pro Tour. Mm-hmm. Pros would destroy them. But that community would show up. Yeah. If you were to get a good Pro Tour in Arizona, in the Phoenix area.
Yeah.
You know, if you're able to get a good Pro Tour event in near LA or San Francisco, or, you know, obviously like Beaver State's up in the Pacific Northwest, but like, there's a lot of areas that are underserved right now, and obviously they probably aren't going to those locations for other reasons, but there's a lot of areas that are underserved that, like, triple dipping in Texas is not going to be as good spectator-wise as just hitting. I mean, obviously they're hitting Florida this year. That'll be very interesting to see, but, like, there's a lot of really thriving disc golf communities that are just being missed right now that could show up like Charlotte shows up, because, like, USDGC, there's 5,000 to 7,000 people there every day, and it's crazy, and it makes the environment so much better. Obviously when they go to Europe, it's like that.
Yeah,
that's possible in the U.S. It's just we got to pick and choose better.
I think disc golf, like, you can't underestimate the model of like, let's just create an interesting spectacle and go near people and try and make it interesting to them as well. Like, let's go really close to big cities, let's make it affordable, easy to navigate, and let's sell food and beverage and like make it a fun time.
What I would be curious is it happening? Is, like, in my opinion, a big part, or maybe not a big part, but a solid chunk of the Pro Tour's marketing budget should be like local radio and local news stations the weeks leading up.
Yeah.
Like when Worlds comes here, I better hear on 94.9 Star Country, big giveaway station, they better be giving away VIP passes to Worlds.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, Because then
get it out there.
Like the local, as much as radio isn't used, it's still used quite a bit locally to where like every one of my aunts, uncles, father-in-law, they watch the news every night. Put it, you know, can't be that expensive to put a little segment on the news there, at local.
We'll get
station.
On there. We're volunteering ourselves.
Yeah,
we will get on the news station.
In my opinion, that should be something that's weeks ahead. You know, you're sending Edge disc golf to the local schools the week before.
Yeah,
and saying, hey, you know what? Not only are we here teaching how to play disc golf, there's actually a pro disc golf tournament this weekend.
Get your parents. Get bring your parents.
Yeah, you know, there's pizza, there's beverages, there's a concert series, blah blah blah, and then you're. Moving on. That should be a huge push of how you grow the sport and grow the Pro Tour is like getting into the local community the week before, not the local disc golf community, the local community, and saying, hey, this huge spectacle is coming to town. Right. There's going to be food trucks. It's basically a festival and there's frisbees. Yeah.
Well, I think disc golf has always thought that the model, and this is going to be the model most of the time. Like we've always thought the model is have people find the sport of disc golf through like seeing it at a park or trying it out and then go to the pro scene. Who's to say it can't be, I found the pro scene because they're in my local area and I decided to check it out and then I decided to start playing disc golf. We have people who find our channel before they start playing disc golf.
Yeah.
And then they buy discs to start playing.
A lot of people.
That, I think sometimes disc golf works in the other way and that will probably be the most successful model. But like, why can't we work in reverse sometimes? Let's just put it in front of their face because like I mean that's how a lot of us get into hobbies.
Yeah,
like I mean if you see something on YouTube that you've never done before, mine lately has been woodworking.
Yeah.
I've got into whittling that way. I've gotten into like that's how I got really into table tennis.
Got into whittling. I never saw my chess piece.
Oh, I got in already.
You had the gloves, man.
But I'm just saying like that can be a way that people get into hobbies. They don't have to just like start playing it first. They can see it.
Oh yeah, start, and like try going to a pro tour event, never throwing a disc before, and then not having to throw a disc afterwards.
Oh, like, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I went to a rodeo and I had to ride a bull.
Exactly, Hunter. Astute observation.
Very astute. Rodeos do a heck of a job promoting when they're coming to town. The amount of rodeos that I've went to with no care in the world about professional bull riding.
That's what I'm saying.
My first rodeo. If I go to another one, I'll put it that way.
Oh, man. Come on.
And if it's a good time to where like. Me as a disc golf fan can invite my non-disc golf friends because I'm like, no, this is just a good time. Like, you're just going to enjoy this. Because I've been to a PGA Tour golf event. I can tell you right now that non-golf people would love that because that is just cool.
My wife is begging me to go to one just because I described the experience. She loves USDGC too.
Yeah, it's a great time. Yeah, USDGC is the closest thing to it.
They're going to be fascinated watching a pro throw 500 feet.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't?
Next one was, should pro disc golfers dress like pro golfers? 67% voted no, 33% voted yes.
No, I would say no.
I voted no.
Yeah, I think that disc golf is leaning into a happy medium where as long as we are wearing professional-looking attire. I think, I honestly, as much as the disc golf jersey thing kind of makes me squirm a little, I think that there is a... Disc golf has settled into a happy medium where these disc golfers are wearing a high quality shirt that fits them, except for Calvin. They're always way too big on him. But they're wearing that. They're coordinating an outfit they have, and they're able to still show off a little flair, which I think that's a happy compromise.
Because it also has to be somewhat athletic and breathable because they're like leaning around trees and climbing through briars and stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think disc golf is honestly settling into a pretty good place in the wardrobe where it doesn't. I never really find myself ever getting upset about somebody's attire anymore. And
what I think's changed?
What?
The pants?
Money, money, money.
Yeah, players have money.
When you get more money, it's a lot easier to find stuff to fit you better.
No kidding.
Yeah, that's true.
Because then you don't have to go get Russell
Brand
shorts.
Do you remember Regulate the Pants?
I do remember Regulate the Pants. I do think the pants change a lot of things.
Regulate the Pants.
Because if you have 13-inch inseam and one shorts, we've all worn them, comfortable, do not look good. Okay, maybe we haven't.
I think I saw a picture of Connor wearing them on a skateboard the other day.
Yeah, you might be right. Yeah.
Well, he just walked into Walmart and had one shorts. Well,
I think my brother-in-law passed them down to me.
Nah, you just bought them. And they just don't look great.
They don't look
great, guys. Next thing you know, you head over to Lululemon or Fabletics or something. You're like, what are these inches next to the size of large?
TJ Maxx.
Why does it say 7-inch or 9-inch?
Yeah.
And then you buy, and next thing you know, stuff starts fitting you better.
Come on, guys.
Yeah.
I honestly think that is a big thing. And then the next step
fitting clothes is a big deal.
Why I've stopped caring that much about it is obviously eventually all pros will have an apparel sponsor, and they will be being dressed.
That's the. Yes. I think that's
and
also
then it
a
won't
big
even
thing.
Matter the yeah. Dress code won't matter because everyone on lead card will be been dressed by a stylist.
How have we not made disc golf jerseys, like foundation ones?
We've made those like two button polos.
We made the polos, but I'm saying like we never made like the typical disc golf jerseys
because we don't like how they look, Trevor.
I don't hate them anymore.
Are we going to play paintball?
Wow,
or are we
Trevor?
Playing?
No. I've said I literally just said I don't hate them anymore.
I know that's crazy. I don't hate you them hated them like I pretty did. Recently.
Well, there are still ones that here's the problem with the disc golf jersey.
Are you okay with the number on the back?
No.
Okay.
Here's the problem with the disc golf.
At least we're semi on the same page.
The disc golf jersey is a blank template, so therefore they can be so hideous. I have seen some just in the last month.
Real gaudy.
Gross. And when Dickerson goes out there, sorry Chris, and wears a plaid looking one, like
I kind of like that.
I kind of dig that.
Okay. What?
That leans into Tennessee a little bit.
I'm just
the
saying,
one I have problems with is that there's four different type of camos. Stop. You're doing something wrong.
I'm just saying they can get a little out of control, but some of them are very tasteful and cool.
My main thing is all of like the brands, like they just, like all of their sponsors and all, and unfortunately, a lot of disc golf like company logos are really awful.
That's true.
So
that
they're just like
help.
Covered in logos everywhere of every little sponsor that you have, and all of them are different colors.
Apparel sponsors will also get rid of that because apparel sponsors that's the only
that's
logo
true.
On there. That's a, I'm not too worried about it because apparel sponsors I think will fix
true.
Everything.
That's only certain apparel.
Well, okay, sponsors. A disc golf apparel company won't give two frames.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, like, if you have Under Armour or Nike coming in, you're not going to have Nike, and then you're going to have 15 different logos on the back.
No, yeah, Nike.
Because then Nike's going to get
Nike
swallowed
you
out.
You never see paired.
Yeah.
I think the jerseys, I'm not, like, pressed about them, but, like, they can look awful like that, but that just comes down to the people's
I don't think
design.
It's, like, the jersey itself. I
no,
think
it's
just
yeah, it's not
it.
The
well,
shirt
the jersey's
itself.
Just a dry fit.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Dry fit shirts can look good.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But when you say disc golf jersey,
why do we even call them
immediately,
jerseys?
I
why do we
it.
Call them jerseys?
I don't know. Yeah, let's just call them. What should we call them?
Sublimated dry
shirts.
Fits.
Shirts.
That's too long.
Subbies.
Sub-dry.
Subbies. They're subbies.
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 Yeah.
Okay.
The disc golf subbies.
That's fun. Subbies.
Should there be a limit on the amount of discs you can carry in tournament? This one was pretty close. 46% yes, 54% no. I voted no.
Nah.
I say...
Simply because it's if you lose them is the big factor here.
Yeah.
I say yes, but I think that when people... When I say yes, I'm not saying 20 discs. I think the limit should be like 30, 32... I don't hate the idea that a guy loses a disc and then that affects his round. I think that's
well,
strategy.
I think that happens either way. But so I could be team like 36 disc.
Yeah,
limit.
I'm like putting it on a cap to where you just don't have anything
it's
ridiculous
reasonable.
Going on.
Yeah.
Right? Because I do think like if a guy has a Zuka cart,
we should ban Zuka.
He's got 50 to 60 discs in there. That's just like, all right, what are we doing?
Why in golf can't they? Don't they use the push carts? Like, why can't caddies use the wheels?
Because they would probably get bullied.
Is that the only, no, like, is there a PGA core rule against
I don't
it?
Know if there's a rule or not. Like, if you watch, like, competitive junior golf, they don't have caddies and they just push them. That's typically what they use. But it wouldn't surprise me if there was a rule. It also wouldn't surprise me if it was just like, well, who's going to be the first caddy to do that?
I think if like we're if worried, you, if, back to Simon's first point.
If
we're worried about the optics of the sport.
Yeah,
we need to ban carts
because like those bags they use are really nice and like if you can't you're not swinging the golf club if you can't carry around a bag for 18 holes for your guy then like you probably just aren't the right guy for the job.
I'd agree.
And like you take it off your back too, like you're not holding it on your back the whole time.
I think
it's
we
not,
ban. I think we ban carts.
Pretty easy.
Yeah. I think we ban carts for the optics.
For the optics.
For the optics.
I think carts.
All
are
right, it's time
fine.
For a fan favorite. Segment.
That's insensitive. Some people like carts, Hunter.
That's fine. I'm not.
I'm
just
I don't think I would.
I'm just
I don't
trying
think
to make
the carts
everybody
would
happy.
Bother me as much if it weren't for those handles being so long. And then it's like they look like they're just like these big old handles, and then these just squares attached
Guys,
to them.
A lot of people use carts.
That's fine. A lot of people.
What do you mean? Yeah,
a lot of people carry ugly disc golf.
Yeah,
bags.
Like
whoa, Hunter.
They do.
Don't come after people with ugly disc golf bags.
Listen, the cart thing doesn't get me nearly as worked up as Hunter. No, I don't.
I just don't like them.
I really don't have a problem with them. I do think they do look a little weird though. The long handles attached to just a big
bucket.
Rectangle at the end. Like maybe
I understand the
maybe there's not a better way to do it.
I'm just gonna carry a 5 gallon bucket.
Here's what I'll say.
I could see myself being persuaded towards like Zuka carts, Delta carts. I'll never get behind the strollers.
Oh yeah, those are ugly.
Yeah, if never I, get behind that. If, whatever big germ that's just like a golf cart.
That, I don't get that. I don't get it.
Well, it's from they're built for golf bags.
That's what I'm saying. Why are you using the one that's built for golf bags?
Why are you using that?
I'll never.
A lot of, they make ones that are actually self propelled. That like you can like walk behind and just like press a remote
for golf. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the same principle is you just don't want to push your. You want just.
Well,
the
and also
easiest
golf fairways are like manicured. There's like no way you could do that on a disc golf course.
Well, some of them, but not all. Not they do have one. Bigger, like they usually have pretty intense tires on them.
Big tires.
I don't know.
Time for fan favorite segment, Trevor's Trivia.
Come on, Trev, hit us
talk about
it.
A first half of the podcast. People are just.
I mean, probably,
half?
I
can,
we're basically done.
Do you know where we're at?
We're probably 52 minutes.
Hour 10, baby.
Really?
Yeah.
Good time.
This is going to be a 2-hour long podcast.
That flew.
I'm not even kidding.
I can practically see the smoke coming off of the keyboards of people typing right now.
That's great.
Yeah. I can smell it. It might just be the wildfire.
It's probably
so.
The wildfire smoke. I've had to do all my runs on
the treadmill. Is that what we're doing? The trivia thing?
I'd rather die. Yeah, trivia.
Okay, this is how this is going
to
work.
I'd rather carry my discs on a cart than have to run
on
a treadmill.
Ooh, that's bad.
Some guy on Reddit made a really cool chart showing like people's sponsorship paths because I was looking around for that and somebody made me a chart. Well, they didn't make me a chart.
Make him a chart.
So the way I'm going to do this is I'm going to read. This is like, let me give you an example.
Yeah.
Paul's sponsorship path would simply be Innova Discraft. That would be his path.
Yep.
So I'm going to read the path and then first one to yell out the player wins.
Got it.
Oh, that's fun.
And I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Some of these are really difficult. Some are not. Okay.
Sometimes whenever we do games like this and it's me like a speed thing, my brain shuts off. So just don't be like if
I won't be
Hunter just
that's
gets
okay.
every one of them, just don't get mad at me.
There's only 5 of them, so it'll be over
okay.
Because
I'm just, like, just having a good time.
There's at least one or two of these he will not get instantly. I would be shocked.
Okay.
Okay. Very first one. Discraft Prodigy Innova. And if you name a player I didn't have written down, but they meet the criteria,
Jeremy Colling.
I'll accept it. I shouldn't have interrupted you while he was thinking, but yeah, it is Jeremy Colling.
That's okay.
Yeah. Like if I
not who I was going to say.
They had one player provided, but if you name one and it's not the one I'd written down and it checks out, then it'll count. Okay, number 2. Discraft Westside Innova.
Who went to Westside?
This is one of the tougher ones.
Discraft Westside. Who was even on
Westside?
Yeah,
who went from Westside to Innova?
Who started at Discraft?
Westside?
I didn't even know about this.
Westside to Innova. Okay, who's on Innova? Is it like, is like Dark Horse Greg Barsby or something?
Yep, oh! It's Barsby.
Really?
Yeah.
Dang. Wow.
Yeah. He was on Westside for like 2 seasons.
How did you? Where did you pull that from?
I think he was
I was thinking of Innova people and people who were old enough to have careers that we weren't aware of or have
that's
like
great.
Bits of
good line of thought. Wow.
I was going FPO. My mind just like it can't be it because I just assumed Barsby was always with.
That's
I don't even remember Barsby with Discraft.
Well, we wouldn't have remembered anyone with Discraft.
Yeah. The only way you know about Barsby
anybody
with
Discraft back then, we wouldn't really know about because that was before Discraft was.
There's
like,
one of the old Discraft tutorial videos. Barsby is in it.
Oh, okay.
About the Westside thing. Okay, wow. This one is maybe the toughest one. I'm going to save it for last. I'm going to skip it.
Okay.
Oh.
Okay, the next one. Innova Latitude Prodigy Westside.
Matteo.
Correct.
Nice.
The Westside kind of narrows down pretty quick. All right, 2 more. Discraft Innova Prodigy Discraft.
Aaron Gossage.
Discraft Innova Prodigy back to Discraft.
He has not been with that many companies. I've just been waiting for a Prodigy Discraft, I'm not gonna lie.
I don't think Gossage was on Prodigy, was he?
What was Discraft, Gossage on before Discraft?
I don't know that he was on anything before Discraft. I don't
Prodigy
know anything about
back
him.
To
I think he was on Prodigy, wasn't
he? Just
he
just kind of emerged like 2 years ago.
Yeah, I think he just was Discraft. I think he just went
Why did
Discraft.
I think he was on Prodigy?
I don't know.
Maybe he was. I don't know.
I don't think so.
Say it again.
Discraft, Innova, Prodigy, Discraft.
Discraft, Innova, Prodigy, Discraft. Is FPO on this list?
No.
Okay. Discraft, Innova, Prodigy, Discraft. Who went from Prodigy to Discraft?
Bro, frick this. I don't know.
Ulibarri.
Yep. Wow.
Innova. Wow, I forgot his Innova days.
Yeah.
Okay, tied up. Good for you, Connor.
I did my job. I don't have 2. He's beating me.
No, you got 2. Matteo and Colling.
Oh, you're right.
Okay, here's the last one. This is the toughest one. Gateway Innova Prodigy Latitude Innova.
Johnny McRae. Nope.
I like that, though. That was Gateway, a great guess.
Wait, say it again?
Because he's played on like a lot of those. Yeah. Gateway, Innova, Prodigy, Latitude, Innova. Prodigy,
Latitude. Gateway, Innova, Prodigy, Latitude.
Innova, super Prodigy, crazy one that I did Prodigy, not know about.
Latitude, Innova.
Is, and they're still with Innova right now?
Yes. Have been for a while. I think the Latitude stint was like only one season.
Is it Calvin? Mm-mm. That would. Where was Calvin? Was Calvin anywhere before Innova? That's what I thought.
I'm trying to think who the frick was with Latitude.
I believe it was like one season Gateway. With Gateway.
Gateway, Innova, Prodigy, Latitude,
yeah,
Innova?
There was a couple with Prodigy.
Holy darn.
Kind of during that era when they first came up. Then the Latitude for a season, then been with Innova for a while.
Is it... Where was Nate Sexton before Innova? I think
Sexton was always with Innova.
That's what I thought, too.
He definitely wasn't with Latitude. That's Latitude that keeps throwing me off. Because, like, Gateway, I mean...
Well, a lot of people can start with Gateway.
Yeah, like, Gateway, I mean, you could have thrown just Wizards and been on Team Gateway. So, like, Gateway's not throwing me off.
There's a reason that makes this one especially tough. I'll give you a hint because it's because this player had a break in their career. So a lot of these things happened maybe like earlier, and then there was a break and then they came back.
Josh Anton?
No, I guess though.
David Wiggins.
Mm-mm. He's always been with Innova. Like probably since he was born.
I don't know.
Let me try and
there's
find.
There's someone in my head. Who's the hop guy?
Brinster?
Brinster.
Dang it.
Give me some like wins they had.
The best...
Philo Brathwaite?
No, this player...
That's a good guess. When he said to wins, I guess.
This player has a Tour Series disc with Innova.
Okay. Currently.
That is a driver.
Oh, wow.
Currently.
Okay.
Currently have a Tour Series Innova disc?
Okay, I'm just thinking
about... Joel Freeman?
No, good guess.
Was it a good guess?
Yeah, I think so.
Garrett Gurthy.
There it is.
Oh! You know how I got there? How? When he said good guess, and I was like, what could tie Joel Freeman to someone else on Innova? I was like, oh, the gaudy jerseys. Garrett Gurthy.
That's a good one.
Winner, winner.
That was a fun game, Trevor.
Give me
really
my chicken dinner.
Give him his chicken dinner, guys.
So the PDGA has rescheduled Champions Cup to the middle of June. End of June. Problem.
Oh my gosh, no way.
They rescheduled it. Who could have ever seen that
coming?
I
need to go back and clip whenever you first announced it because you literally said, like, I'll be talking to you in a month whenever they reschedule.
Yeah.
Like, you said that.
Newly scheduled June dates, though.
They give you your flowers.
There's a large amount of people who are starting to complain because it conflicts with the Swedish Open, a European DGPT event in the middle of the growing Europe swing. Here's the thing we've learned. First off, probably going to reschedule it again because you have a lot of big names upset about this. Second thing we've learned, apparently the Europe swing was going to pull more pros than we thought. Remember when we were like, no one's going to go play the Europe swing if they do a split. Eagle McMahon, very upset. Paul said, you know where I'll be and put the Swedish flag like he's not even going to play Champions Cup.
Well, those two pros don't surprise me.
Obviously, Niklas and Vino, they're up. They don't know if they should come because they were planning to play in Europe, so they don't know if they should. Like, now there's a major in the middle of it. I think it was Eagle that wrote a lot of big name pros were really excited about the Europe swing. So, like, tough to see this happen.
Remind me when the Europe swing happens in the U.S. schedule.
I think it's like, because this is going between like Preserve and something else.
I'm starting to imagine this scenario where like five big pros go over to Europe, five to eight. And all of a sudden, we have this thing where there's one event happening in Europe where all the fun players to watch are, but the field isn't full. And then we've got these other events in the U.S. where the field is more full, but all the best players aren't here. And we basically have two incomplete, not as good disc golf events happening.
Yeah, that could very easily happen.
That's where this whole European swing thing is confusing me, because it's like, I think they may be making a mistake there.
They made a huge mistake. I didn't think it before because I was like, well, surely pros will choose the events over here with history. But I think a lot of pros are
just want to go
really
to
excited about going to Europe.
And they're like, oh, we can just go earn points because we're the only certain ones of us can afford to go over there.
Yeah, and so it'd be really easy to win full-on pro.
It's classism.
But anyways, a growing amount of European and American pros have complained about the newly scheduled June dates because it conflicts with Swedish Open. PDGA Europe has expressed their opinion and conveyed the feedback from European members to the PDGA. The new PDGA Europe general manager, Juuso Nieminen, wrote in a European player Facebook group, they are aware of the issues this change would cause and the situation is currently being reviewed. So the way he wrote, they are aware of the issues this change would cause, makes me think, like, were they aware of it before they made the decision?
No, I bet they were.
And the situation is currently being... Here's what I think happened. Is I think the PDGA saw the dates and were like, well, this is the one that fits the best because they put it at Northwoods Black. So the plan is Northwood Black for the Champions Cup, and then Ledgestone is only going to be at Eureka Temp. I think that the PDGA made this decision thinking in their heads, well, no one's probably playing the Europe Swing really anyways. And so then players can just choose to, like, there's so many big events going on around this that they weren't thinking it was really going to be a big confliction. Mm-hmm. And then once they started getting pushback, it was a typical, in my eyes, from what we're seeing on Facebook, a typical PDGA announce first, ask for permission after.
Yeah, they're like the kings of that at this point. I'll tell you what, if I'm any of the TDs around that European swing, I am shaking in my boots right now because it sounds like you might not be getting players.
Yeah.
That stinks.
Well, I think the PDGA will end up rescheduling the Champions Cup again because enough of the big, loud players are going to be upset.
I'm nervous about this European swing thing.
No, this got me nervous about it. That was a bigger story point.
Why don't they just ask for feedback before they
make announcements? No, that's the simple thing is before you schedule it, first time, ask for feedback.
Yeah.
And then you would have thought by the overwhelming amount of feedback they got, they would have at least asked for feedback the second time when they rescheduled it.
Yeah, seriously.
And now they're getting more other feedback from... Because it'd be one thing if it's like, okay, you have like guys who are like 20th, 30th in the world giving you feedback, but it's like Paul McBeth and Eagle McMahon.
Yeah.
Like number one and two were going
like
to for feedback.
The first two guys you should have like...
Yeah, like these guys who are like, hey, y'all are probably the two most likely to go to Europe. If we put Champions Cup here, what do you think? And they're like responding on Facebook, like Eagle's just saying, "Well, this is not good," on Facebook, like he saw it the first time when I saw the post.
Yeah.
So, anyways, because Nicholas Antela said we have one stretch outside of the U.S. next year, and now we have a major in the U.S. at the same time. Doesn't make any sense. Seems like they don't care about Europe. There won't be any Americans playing the early part of DGPT Europe now. I might skip Champions Cup and play in Europe. I care about majors more than anything, but this feels wrong.
I care about majors more than anything except for this.
Yeah, so it'll be very interesting to see what happens here.
I'm trying to like, okay. So we have Portland is the Pro Tour Plus, and then Beaver State Fling happens, but...
The same weekend as the Turku Open?
I say the Turku Open is the next weekend. So Turku Open, so Preserve, and then Preserve happens... And then that's where Champions Cup was going to be and the Swedish Open. So Preserve, Des Moines, those two are going to be the ones that get eaten up.
Preserve, Des Moines, and possibly Beaver State because it's the week before.
So, like, that's a bummer because...
Those are fun events.
Those are fun events.
And Champions Cup, maybe.
Yeah. So those would be the two to three that would potentially be on the chopping block as far as like pros might just not show up
but,
and have super weak fields. That's sorry to those of you in Iowa. Right?
I would just
Des Moines?
Stay tuned.
Yeah.
Stay tuned. We'll see what happens.
That could be a real bummer for you.
But we'll see. We'll see what happens. Okay. I don't know what's gonna happen, but that's the newest update. Champions Cup has been rescheduled. No one's surprised there.
What a mess.
But they rescheduled it to the middle of the Euro swing, so.
Wait.
And I worked.
Why did they
sorry? And they put it in June. They put the major in
so
June.
So why can't it go to its old date? Because they
in
they,
April?
Because they plan the rest of the schedule around it being at the end of the year. Instead of just like doing
Yeah, there is a weekend around that time. Because I remember pointing it out.
Yeah.
It could still be in the Southeast. Because I think I said you could just do it at Nevin in Charlotte.
Yeah, that's what needs to
happen. That's what makes the most sense. It's just find it in April. Because we need a major in April. Because right now, where they moved it... Is sure it's earlier in the season, but it's going to be Champions Cup, and then there's like two events, and then European Open.
I'm sorry.
So now there's going to be two majors in like 4 weeks.
But all I can think about is how confusing we're going to be trying to figure out who the player of the year is, and we're going to be like, well, okay, the European swing wins only count for like 0.96, and the Preserve in Des Moines, because nobody was here, only count for like 0.72 wins. That's going to be such a mess.
Yeah.
Oh,
they should have.
Gosh.
The European Tour need to have no connection to the Pro Tour. Like, the Pro Tour could own it, but the points should not cross.
Yeah.
Like, that whole point cross mess, like, because that's what's tough is, like, if I'm a pro who can afford to go to Europe, why wouldn't I? Because I have a guaranteed weaker field, no matter how many of my buddies travel, a guaranteed weaker overall field where I can earn points.
And we go to Europe.
And I get to go to Europe.
Come on, guys.
Win, win, win. Time for the last segment, disc golf in the bag.
Let's hit him with
Connor, you won last time. You decided the order. Quick shout out to our podcast, by the way, in the bag. If you ever want to hear thought processes on why people put certain discs in their bag, you like watching in the bags, you like thinking through what shot selection and stuff like that. It's a fun podcast hosted by Robbie C and All Business Brad. You can check it out on the podcast network. But Connor, what's the order for today?
I'll go ahead and I'll give myself first.
Okay.
Okay.
For funsies, I haven't been first.
Okay.
And I'll go me, Hunter, Trevor.
Cool. All right. And today's prompt
We're going to have same ones.
No,
today's prompt is the best doubles team names.
Best doubles team names. I'll go ahead and warn you.
Con.
I accidentally got stuck in a certain theme. Could not get out of it.
Okay.
But I wrote down many, but I have picked ahead of time which ones I'm going to choose.
Smart. Good.
Yeah.
What's your first one?
Start them off. The Pillsbury Throw Boys.
That's very good. That's very good.
Is it me next?
Yeah, it's you, Hunt.
I definitely spelled Pillsbury wrong. Pillsbury.
That's a great one. Pillsbury
Thank
Throw
you.
Boys. That's fun.
I thought of that as I was brushing my teeth.
I'm going to take an easy one here, which is the Bogey Bros.
I had that on my list.
I feel like
I was
going
to say that as a joke.
I feel like it's just an easy one.
Okay, I've got two here. I kind of went with iconic duos and then made them disc golf.
Nice.
Oh,
so
I love that. That's
here's
good.
What I've got first. I've got Thing C1 and Thing C2. Like Thing 1 and Thing 2, but Thing C1 and Thing C2.
Nice. All right, you
like
have a second
C1
one?
Putting, C2 putting.
C1.
Yes.
Ah,
like the letter
that's
C.
Funny. That's funny. That's
I typed
funny.
It right.
And then the second one I'm going to go with here is Sure Grip Locked Holmes and Dr. Weakside.
Sure Grip.
That one's a bit of a stretch.
Sure Grip Locked Holmes.
And Dr. Weakside?
Yeah, it's like Dr. Watson.
I understand.
I turn it into Weakside.
That's tough, funny. Trevor. That's a little tough.
That's funny.
Tough for what?
I like the
it's
Sure
It's just
grip
when it's
Holmes.
Written out. It's. Is that how you want me to write it? Huh? Don't look at these.
Oh, yeah, no. I realized it was a stretch.
It scrambled my brain, but I like it.
Yeah. Listen, I got to really contort a lot of these.
My next one, the next one I'm going to take is Prodigy's Lawyers.
That's funny.
That's funny.
That's funny, huh?
You should have done like Prodigy's legal team.
Change it to Prodigy.
If you went into worse one, I like yours better.
That's a great. That is a great idea, huh?
Connor, you
that's
get
a
two?
Funny. That is funny.
All right.
I feel
I'm
like that's
go,
a name that like you and I would have cooked up for our doubles team.
That,
that's
you,
funny.
That's where it came from.
This guy Hunt's funny.
My brain.
My next one is Craft Smackin' Trees.
That's great. I love that.
You get another one, Connor?
And then the Yoink Peppermint Patties.
I like it.
See, you got stuck on food.
Yeah, maybe I was just really hungry this morning.
Yeah.
Those are great, though. My next one, I'm going to go
mac
with...
and cheese. Your trees is great. That's
Thank
very
you.
Fun.
Thank you.
I'm going to go with this one. I feel like you've probably seen a million times, but Chain Smokers.
The Chain Smokers.
That's a classic. If you want to support tobacco abuse.
Okay, my last two. This one is a play on Bonnie and Clyde. It is Annie and Glide.
All right.
And then, let's see, for the last one, I've got Shanky and Scooby-Doo.
That's good. I like that.
There we go.
Yeah. I like that you went with like the duos. That's
yeah.
fun. That's fun. Yeah. That's a good idea.
The last one I'm going to take
Come
is
on.
Two Finger Flingers.
Two Finger Flingers.
I thought a really I like funny that. I saw a really funny one for
That's just like a good name.
For like a women's team it was Chicks with Flicks. Like Chick Flicks but you got
That's good.
Nice.
That's good.
Last one.
I wish I had thought of something with Split Grip.
Oh yeah.
Okay, my last one is going to be let's see if like last one I want a dark horse go with a different one.
There's the indecision again.
No, I'm
and
just
there's
gonna
a
go
smugness.
I got
there's a smugness.
Ritz Smashers.
Nice.
Ritz Smashers?
Yeah, it's a Ritz like crackers.
Oh, come on now, Connor.
Yeah.
Your other ones were so Let's hear the honorable mentions.
You know my
Is
honorable
everybody
mentions?
Done? Do you still have one more?
No, I'm done.
Okay.
All right, Connor's honorable mentions.
Last time you had like three honorable mentions I liked better than
Yeah,
one of the
I know. I know. My honorable mentions are always better. Smoothie Kings.
That's good. That is a good one.
Peanut Butter and Jammies.
I kind of like that.
Basket Robbins.
That's good too.
Putter Fingers. IHOP. International Huck of Plastic. Oscar Mayer Leaners.
That's
then
so fun.
OB, one Kenobi, nothing but noodle arms, and my favorite one, save bogey, live better at Walmart.
I Googled, I didn't use any of the ones I Googled, but to try to like get some inspiration, I just looked up a Reddit thread of the like best disc golf doubles names.
That's where I saw that one.
Designated drivers was one. Thought that was funny.
That's funny.
The one I really was like, I want to use that, but I don't want to have to tell everyone I didn't come up with it. Was Innova our heads, like Innova.
Oh, that's so good.
Because then I was like, can I start making some puns with like disc like manufacturers names? I couldn't.
It's difficult. It's tough.
That was when I got the Prodigy's lawyers. Like, what can I do with Prodigy?
That's
like,
funny.
Lawyers. That's
good
fun.
List, boys.
I thought of another one. But this would be like the team, the doubles team name of like probably 50% of the nation. Team Lone Star.
Team Lone.
That would have been funny.
That's funny.
All right.
That was a good list.
There you have it. You can vote for us over
comment
on...
Comment down below your doubles team ideas, too.
That's always fun. You can vote for these over on Twitter or on Instagram. Other than that, we'll see you again next week, probably with another Champions Cup rescheduling. Talk to you then.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.